This is an ABC podcast.
Hello, Anne Jones with you, and this is Off Track, the nature program for the ABC. But of course, we're just one program across all of the bits of this big organisation. And today, I'd love to introduce you to a new podcast on the block. Now, sure, it's primarily about video games, and it's called How Games Play Us. It's hosted by Rad from Good Game Spawn Point. But this episode, the second of their episodes, I just loved. I loved what they were talking about, I loved how they talked about it, and I found it so interesting that I wanted to bring it to you, because in it, the panel ask a question that I think about quite a bit. Can we recreate the impacts of being out there in nature without being out there in nature? In this episode, Rad is speaking with Ray Johnston, editor of Junkie.com, and Terry Burdack, who is the game designer of an Australian nature-based game called Paperbark.
So Terry, you mentioned Paperbark, which is a game that you worked on, and it's a game that I would describe as kind of a digital storybook about a wombat set in Victoria. And one of the amazing things about this game is that the natural environment that the wombat walks through is pretty much another character in the game.
Yeah, that was always a really big decision early on, was that the environment needed to be front and center and have a lot of characteristic, mostly because of how unique the Australian landscape is. So we really wanted to let that shine through. And that was one of the pillars of the game. There was obviously the wombat, which everyone talks about, which is great. Love the little things.
It's the most adorable thing in the world, honestly, this wombat.
Yeah. But that was always like a really hard decision when developing the game. Like, I used to always talk about it like, oh, it's a game about the bush. It's a game about the bush. But then, you know, like, had to kind of face facts that it was a game about a wombat. But for me, yeah.
I like how you're like, no, it's not.
Yeah. Well, like, the wombat was always like a vessel for the player to explore the bush, you know. So that's how I always framed it in my head. So that was always like a weird thing that I had to kind of accept.
But do you, though? Because, I mean, in some ways it is a game about the bush.
Well, it is. Yeah.
It's just that doesn't work so good for marketing material,
yeah,
that's all.
Yeah, it actually kind of came down to that a bit. So the bush just was always such an important aspect of the story, and obviously it is the setting, but the uniqueness of the flora and fauna just had so many different kind of aspects. It has such a strong character. Like, yeah, it was really, really hard to capture, and it was always really, really hard to express in the right way because of that as well.
This is something that I've definitely noticed. So I do a lot of hiking, and I actually do a lot of hiking with Ray. And something that we talk about a fair amount on our hikes is how beautiful Australia is and how unique the landscape is.
Yeah, I believe the term we most commonly use is aggressively pretty.
Yeah.
This is aggressively pretty. Yeah. Look at how ridiculously beautiful this is.
Up in your grill.
Yeah, right? Just like in your face. There's nothing you can do about it. It is a glorious looking country.
Mm. And it's not that, you know, British soft rolling hills and, you know, I always talk about hard and soft sclerophyll trees, which is, we're going to get a bit nerdy for a second here.
Oh, no.
Which is the sclerophyll, it's kind of like the building block of the leaf. It can either be hard or soft. So soft would be things like an oak leaf, which is quite pillowy. And then hard sclerophyll leaves would be like gum leaves, which, you know, basically like cardboard, like they snap. And that prevents moisture loss. So Australian native plants are adapted to the very harsh Australian conditions. And I feel like that's part of what makes it aggressively pretty, because it's not soft and pillowy. It's like strong and it's harsh and I love it.
I think one of the things that we're experiencing when we're in nature, all of those feelings that we try to talk about now, are really scientific benefits that our body and our brain is experiencing from being outside.
Is this the research that you did?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I have broken this down, right?
This is so great.
So there are a number of effects that nature can have on us, and I've gone and compared them to the effects that we can obtain from virtual worlds. So one of the big things that nature can do for your brain is improve your short-term memory. So there's been a bunch of experiments where they put people outside. I'm using they as the collective term for a group of scientists, in this case from the University of Michigan in 2009.
Just some friends of yours.
Casual day.
And the idea of it is that when you're in that environment and you are, you know, learning the names of trees, for example, it's much easier to do when you're physically standing in front of them. If you're learning facts about a particular environment or where you are, it's much easier to do if you're there in person. So this can translate into games, because you are immersed in that world and you are experiencing it and you have to walk through it and you are, in effect, a part of it. And it is that difference between, you know, active technology and passive technology. If you're just there watching a documentary, yeah, you may absorb some of the information. But if you have to be physically involved in it, if you're making decisions, if you're clicking on something, if it's providing you with clues to solve a puzzle, you're going to retain that information for a lot longer.
But why do we like to explore nature both in reality and virtually?
Would you like me to reference yet another study?
Oh, please.
So there was one from Stanford University in 2012 that pointed out how being in nature and even just seeing images of nature can restore your mental energy. It's effectively a break for our brains. And part of this is connected to the feeling that you have, that feeling of awe that you get.
Yeah, right.
When you're either in an environment or you're looking at an environment that is just so beautiful and stunning. And a couple of the things that it does is obviously it enhances your well-being, but they also found that it makes you less materialistic.
Really?
It makes you really just focus on and appreciate the things that we have in life that don't cost anything and that we all essentially, or hopefully all, have access to.
I think that was in it was obviously in a book, but there was I think it was Brave New World. That was like a big part of that kind of social conditioning in the story. I remember there was a thing where when the kids are young and they go outside, they then bombard them with like all these noise and these harsh things to then make them not like nature, so then they don't want to go out in it, so then they will want to buy things and be really materialistic and not worry about the things outside of their little world.
Yeah, yeah. They keep that consumerism wheel
turning. Yeah, by denying them like kind of interest in nature.
Yeah.
But it really is as well, like even going for hikes, it's a forced break. No one can contact you. No one can hassle you. You have to disconnect from the world, from all these problems that you pile upon yourself, and just be in the moment. And I think having those options stripped away from you is something that sometimes we need.
Nature trap.
Yeah. Do you find that you have this same experience when you're playing a game?
Definitely. It'll depend on the game. I do find myself really being absorbed by the environments in particular games. I'm a big fan of open world RPGs. You know, things like Horizon Zero Dawn, I sunk a couple of hundred hours into, you know, Dragon Age Inquisition. Anything where I can, you know, jump on some type of horse-like creature and run around and try to find the edges of the map, or, you know, pick up little pieces of a puzzle and discover things in the environment. But also places where I can just sit and reflect and just look around. I particularly love games where, you know, they've had the opportunity to put the amount of detail in where you can just watch blades of grass. And I will just space out.
That's why I love fishing in games as well.
Don't even get me started.
I'm starting you on fishing in games, Terry.
How good is fishing in games?
It is great. Yeah.
You fish in real life though, don't you?
Right? I do fish in real life, and I absolutely get kind of the same enjoyment out of fishing in a game that I do real life, other than the potential to catch actual food, just in that it gives you a moment to switch off and do something that's meditative but still active.
It's like, okay, I'm here for a reason. I'm here with a purpose. But for now, I have to be still. And I have to just sit here and listen and look around and wait for something to happen. I don't have the choice to do anything else. I feel like this all comes back to having my options restricted.
You're like, I can't switch off unless I'm absolutely forced to. That's what I'm hearing. But I take your point absolutely, because I enjoy fishing even if I don't catch anything. Even just casting the line is calming and it feels good. It feels good. And I think that we are able to capture that in games to a degree, but where are the limitations on that? Because something that you said piqued my interest in that, trying to find the edges of the map in a game, and obviously games by their nature have to have edges to the map. So does that affect your perception of your freedom and kind of openness in nature?
I think it does in a way, because really, in real life, you're not going to find the edge of the map, like, unless you're literally on a cliff. And then you can go swimming, I suppose, if you're really that way inclined. You know, we're kind of limited by our own energy. We're not limited by a world that's been created around us. But at the same time, I don't know. I think that's the point where you kind of turn around and look for the detail. You look for the tiny things.
What you mentioned earlier about that, having those moments of reflection and watching the blades of grass and that kind of thing. I think just that inherent feeling of being around that kind of organic movement is really, really important, particularly what I get out of games. I really enjoyed Warcraft 3, and I used to just set up custom maps and just not build anything. There's just something that's really nice about that feeling, that day-night cycle and the rain and these trees and all of that kind of thing. And I think that it doesn't need some huge amount of graphical detail. I think that's obviously why Minecraft was so fantastic. But I think it's just kind of capturing those little details that you just can kind of settle in, you know. And I think Breath of the Wild did that really well, because they kind of used those moments as almost like set pieces again, but for exploration. So you'd have a hill that you'd want to go behind or something, and then you'd encounter an amazing storm or like an amazing thing. And I guess Red Dead did a similar thing as well. There's just something about that that's really nice, is that feeling of, yeah, that's right, that's what being outside is like. Yeah. You know, that sounds bad, but that's ultimately what the goal is, you know.
Well, that's a huge question, right? It asks us, does this prevent us from going outside and experiencing actual nature? Because now we can just do it virtually without the bugs and the mud and all the rest of it, which is something that I kind of like about fishing in games, is you don't have to worry about waking up at the crack of dawn to go. It's all the enjoyment with none of the tricky bits.
I have a study about this. So researchers in Norway in 2018... This was a study where they compared people going for a walk outside, going for a walk on a treadmill, or going for a walk on a treadmill with a VR headset on, simulating what the people walking outside were doing. Stop laughing at me. And they found that the people walking on the treadmill with the virtual reality headset on actually had the poorest experience out of the three groups.
Really?
Yeah. And there was a couple of reasons why. Cyber sickness is a thing that they cited as the first one, which I think is that quite common experience that a lot of us have when we put a VR headset on and ride on a virtual roller coaster. Yeah. And before we know it, we're nauseous. Mm. So a lot of people experienced nausea when they were doing this. Another thing was the poor image quality. It just didn't compare to being in the real world. There was a disconnect. They couldn't really immerse themselves in it properly. And there was a real lack of engagement with their environment as well. And I think this is a bit of a key difference between most video games that we're playing and, say, one of those virtual reality experiences, which I think a lot of people would think about when you say the words, you know, virtual nature. You think, oh, yeah, like that, you know, David Attenborough, you know, deep sea doco where I'm going to put this headset on and be in a submarine. But it really is that opportunity for engaging with the environment and interacting with it and being able to impact on it and your actions within that environment that help recreate those kinds of feelings that you get.
I think about the image quality is a really interesting point, because I think often, and this was something that we really struggled in terms of Paperbark, was like that idea of realism. You know, trying to capture and make it feel real, I think is a bit of a farce, and often not really the point of letting people engage in with these environments. And I think Proteus is a really good example of that. You know, like wandering around in that really stylized, kind of weird 2D, colorful space, that felt more like being outside and walking around in nature than like a lot of other games I played. I think even more so than like Red Dead and these really high graphic kind of games. I think that stuff is kind of back to that feeling thing, you know what I mean? Like, I think if you're on a treadmill with a headset and all that kind of stuff, there's a lot of things that are not necessarily constraining you, but like really wanting your attention.
Yeah.
And I think that's, it would almost cause too much of a distraction, which is the opposite of what you want to do when you go outside and if you want to go exploring.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think it's the realism of the games that helps you become immersed and experience and enjoy the nature elements of it. I think it's just how involved you can be. And you can absolutely immerse and absorb yourself into worlds that look nothing like your own,
yeah,
and nothing like a world that you will ever, ever visit. It's not about recreating the nature that we have in real life. It's about discovering a new one.
And that's probably, like, if anything, the most exciting part about making games is we get to do that. We get to make these worlds that people haven't seen, get to make these experiences people have never experienced, then draw from nostalgia, draw from our own experiences to make them feel real or feel familiar.
Yeah.
One interesting thing that I want to bring up in relation to VR in particular is when I was in Seattle, I got to play this virtual reality experience, which was not a game. It was just an experience in which you are a tree and you start as a seed under the earth and then you slowly sprout and grow, and it's slower than you as a person who consumes a lot of digital media wants things to progress. As you come up, the controllers give you branches that you can move around a little bit, and birds will nest in your branches, and slowly you break through the canopy until you can see the whole forest around you, and it's gorgeous. And then a fire starts in the distance.
Oh.
And because they do it as kind of an extended reality situation, they light a match and blow it out so that you can smell smoke, and they turn a heater on so that you can feel heat coming, and they start a fan so you can feel wind blowing and things like that. And this fire just slowly comes towards you, and you realize that you are a tree. You cannot move.
Yeah.
You are reliant on someone else to come and put this fire out, and you just stand there kind of hoping and begging and waiting for some people to come and put this fire out, and they don't.
Yeah, right.
And that's, you burn down, and that's where the experience ends.
Wow.
It was quite impactful. Like, I did that a year ago and I still think about it sometimes, because it allows you to have this experience that's outside of yourself and to really think about a tree. And, just even looking at your reactions now when I tell that story is pretty powerful. And I feel like if you played it, it would be even more impactful. So
I'll never play it. Yeah. Just, no.
I'm like 90% empathy. I'm upset right now. So
sounds hideous.
This is awful.
They should delete this game.
I'm going to have nightmares about this. Never even played it.
But it's a great tool, is it not, for producing that empathy in people who maybe aren't quite as empathetic as you, Ray? I also think that tree VR experience is a really interesting way of looking at things like bushfires, which is an element of what happens in Paperbark as well. Why was it important for you, Terry, to include something like that in the game?
Just because it's just completely inherent to Australia. Our whole environment has evolved from bushfires, natural or controlled. It's just literally the roots of our foundation here. And so it was really, really important just to include it, because they're a lot different as well here than in other places, because it's such an important part of how the environment plays out.
Part of why I find it interesting is I feel in Paperbark it's kind of a story point. And like you said, it's the environment playing out in the way that it does and in the way that it's meant to. And it doesn't mean that it's not scary, that it doesn't have impact, but at the same time, it doesn't feel evil. Whereas I feel like with this VR tree experience, the fire was made to feel evil.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that was something that we wanted to try and show. Like, there's hints of it which are pretty subtle in the game. You can actually hear some thunder and things like that. So the idea is that it's been implied that it's started from lightning, which is the number one cause of bushfires in Australia. And then we also just want to show like that regrowth and how just that is just what happens. Like, usually lightning starts a fire. The fire goes through, rain then follows and sorts it out. And then within like a couple of weeks, there's regrowth, because that's just what happens. Obviously, like, it was a bit of a turning point in the story. That was also because a lot of our kids' books that we had, the Australian ones, they always seem to have kind of like a darker undercurrent. And I think there's always that extreme and like that harshness of the bush, which kind of makes that inherent to our stories.
Many Australian-made games aren't necessarily about Australia, which is fine and normal. But one thing that stood out to me about Paperbark was I realized how much I felt like I was lacking games which reflected my Australian experience.
Yeah.
It seemed to resonate with a lot of people. And also the reason I wanted to kind of have it as a focus is because you kind of can't argue with it. You put up a thing of Vegemite or Tim Tam or VB or whatever. It's like, that doesn't speak to everyone, and it's a
always got that one guy going, I don't eat Vegemite,
yeah,
and I'm an Aussie.
Yeah, and it's also just like this product that someone made that is, yeah. is like a thing that was made here. So therefore, you know, but with the bush and like a lot of native flora and fauna, like you can't argue with it. It's neutral territory in a sense. It is here. It's from here. And there's nothing that can argue with that. And I think that that was always a big reason why we wanted to include that as like a big thing.
I think we're so used to seeing Australia represented poorly in media.
Yeah.
And particularly in games. Like even when people, you know, mean well, you know, they're putting the 12 apostles next to the Gold Coast. Yeah. Or, you know, everything is like this Mad Max-esque depiction of Australia as a wasteland
yeah.
with nothing here. So I think
or even just a desert.
To be able to have people like yourself using games as a vehicle to introduce people all around the world to, you know, the richness of what we have here and what has always been here in an educational way, but in a way where that they're connecting with it and they're a part of it and they're exploring it and discovering it, I think is vitally important. And I think we need to see more of it. I think we need to celebrate it more. This is something that we struggle with as Australians because of tall poppy syndrome, but we need to toot our own horn a bit more loudly, I think. You know, we're good at it with sports people, but we're not so good at it with, you know, the beauty that we have here.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, we'll point to a bridge, but we're not pointing to, you know, these specific berries that contain, you know, enough vitamin C, you know, to keep you going and make sure that you never get scurvy. I don't know. I'm going over the top. I've got no study for that. but you know what I mean? Like,
absolutely.
We've got such, we do have such a rich environment here. And it's difficult to have a full appreciation of it if you're not going out and exploring it every weekend, which a lot of people don't have the opportunity to do.
I love that this podcast has not only turned into a kind of love letter to nature, but specifically a love letter to Australian nature.
Yeah.
We're all just sitting here being like, oh my gosh, gum trees. Australia. Let me tell you about eucalypts.
I wanted to say, I think something that I would love to see as well while we're putting out a wish list into the universe yeah. for any developers that are listening. I'm going to talk briefly about Stardew Valley again. So with the change of seasons in Stardew, you know, it becomes autumn. You see all the leaves on the trees change colour. Specific fruits will grow on certain trees. Different crops will grow. But it's also an indication that, you know, you can catch catfish when it's raining during that season in the secret forest, but at no other time during the year. And this is something that people might think is restricted to a video game world, you know, these kind of environmental clues, but absolutely they are not. You know, they exist in the real world. You know, when there is a certain type of flower in bloom, it means that it's a peak time to go fishing for a certain, you know, species of fish. Or, you know, even, you know, with the stars in the sky, you know, if there's a certain constellation in a certain position, that means do not go swimming in the ocean because there's baby sharks everywhere. You know, and these are things that Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people have been talking about since time began. And obviously, the environment in Australia has changed dramatically since colonisation. A lot of the species of plants and animals don't exist anymore or don't exist in the same form that they used to. So those clues, you know, the stories of which existed for thousands of years have had to adapt and change, you know. So I would love to see those stories that existed in our environment pre-colonisation. I'd love for the richness of, you know, the farming practices that existed here prior to, you know, white people rocking up, and how they exist now, and even some ways of bringing them back. Yeah, even subtly. It doesn't need to be the crux of the story. It can just be something that exists in the background. I'd love to see things like that.
And I think games can be a really interesting way to reconnect us with those ideas in an educational way that isn't necessarily about just learning about that, but it's about experiencing it.
Yeah. I think it changes the importance of it as well. You know, if you're trying to progress your character, you know, with whatever it's doing along its storyline, but you need a particular item in order to do that, but you need to be paying attention to the environment around you in order to obtain that item. Like, it's really elevating, you know, how vitally important our environment is and our ecosystems and how they interact with each other and how that we're just one part of it. You know, we're just one part of it playing out our stories. We're not bigger than it.
You can find the full episode of How Games Play Us in your podcast app or in the ABC Listen app or at abc.net.au. Now remember, meet me, Anne Jones, and the ABC's nature nerd blimp we call Off Track right here at the same time next time. That's when I'll take you somewhere else.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.